Dopamine is the anticipation of reward, but our brain habituates to rewards we already have, and it always goes after the next thing. And the reason for this is very simple. Like, imagine our hunter-gatherer ancestors, and if they found food, they were excited for a few minutes, but if you spend the rest of your life next to that food tree, then you're not going to get maybe other nutritional needs met. You're not going to get water or firewood. So you're not meant to just sit on your butt after you have gotten one reward, but you're meant to seek that the unmet need is what stimulates dopamine.
This is Meredith For Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. I explore the questions people think but don't ask out loud, either because they're taboo or thanks to cultural hypnosis. My mission, and yours if you choose to accept it, is to inspire curiosity by exploring the nuance and paradox of our world. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. Hey, Curiositors, it's me, Meredith. The holidays can be one of those times of great ups and great downs. Postpartum is not just for new moms. In this episode, my guest does some serious expectation management, explaining why constant expectation of happiness can cause chronic stress. She shares practical tips on how to work with the primal part of your brain while living in a modern world, and why you're especially at risk for angst when everything is going right. If you've been here a while, you remember my mental health series around this time in 2020. I got great feedback on that, so you can expect a few mental health episodes between now and February. And if you're new here, those were episodes 56 through 65 and include topics like creativity as a mental health solution, a free guided breathwork session, and how to avoid cults. I even did a solo episode about my personal mental health hacks. If you are new here, welcome. Around here, we press play to get curious, to disrupt the algorithm, and to grow into better humans. We talk about everything from robots to refugees. So bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. There's no specific order to listen to episodes. And whether you're new or a chronic curiositor, thank you for being here. I want to invite you to participate in a fun promo I'm running for November of 2022. Your name will be entered in a weekly drawing for a Meredith For Real beanie when you draft an Apple podcast review, screenshot it, and send it to me, and then submit the review. You have to screenshot that sucker before you submit it because your username is probably not your real name, and I'll need to know how to find you if you win. So be sure to send that to me. I'll be drawing every week, and the reviews really help me prove I have an engaged audience to busy, high in-demand guests. All right, enjoy the show. Have you ever found yourself saying, I shouldn't be so unhappy? I have everything I need, people who love me, a job I don't hate, a roof over my head. I should feel happier. Or maybe you just find yourself doing late night shopping at the expense of your savings account, drinking more than you said you would, or going back into that bad relationship. What if all of these things were connected to your brain chemicals, your primitive brain chemicals? My next guest is a retired professor by trade and an author by passion. She was unconvinced by prevailing theories on human motivation, and after researching the animal origins of our brain chemicals, wrote the book Habits of a Happy Brain. Today, she's going to help us be honest about the brain we have and understand our expectation of constant happiness can be a source of chronic distress. Bridging the gap between the primal and the present, embracing her inner mammal, gray matter groupie, Dr. Loretta Bruning. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great. And I could also say I'm a white matter groupie. So this is a big thing.
Yes, I love it. And I would love for you to help us understand more about all of that matter, all of the brain chemicals and how our ancient brain chemicals, you know, what they have to do with our modern day emotions. So I did something kind of fun. I hope you think it's fun. I came up with a list of emotions and behaviors that are generally thought of as unhappy. And I thought that, or I was hoping anyway, that you could tell us the brain chemical connected to them and what the ancient mammal driver is behind it. Are you up for it?
Sure. Okay. Sure.
So the first one is, what brain chemical are we seeking when we stay in a toxic relationship or friendship?
Oh, well, so the interesting thing is love triggers all of the happy chemicals, which is why it's so motivating. But dopamine is the anticipation of reward. If you're like, okay, something good's going to happen, you know, you're going toward it. Oxytocin is the expectation of social support. So like, oh, this time they're really going to give me the support that I'm craving. Serotonin is social importance. We all have a natural urge to be special. And in the animal world, it promotes your genes, which is why it's so primal inside us. And truth be told, like often you have a power dynamic with your partner and it gives you power in one way or another, maybe not with them, but that with the rest of the world when you're with them. And finally, endorphin. Well, laughing and crying stimulate endorphin. But but a big, big thing here is that in between your animal brain and your human cortex, there's the old neural pathways, which are really controlling the chemicals. And those pathways, which is the white matter, effectively, it's the big neural pathways that you built when you were young, when your neuroplasticity was high. And those pathways are built by whatever triggered your chemicals in the past. So that's why we repeat ourselves, because our pathways are built by our past experience and they turn on so easily because they're just big.
Wow. That explains so much. That explains attachment. There's so much there. Oh my goodness. Okay. What about overeating?
Okay, good. Yeah, this is a really good list. Yeah. So overeating. So there's another thing here that is really important to know that's not related to happy chemicals. There's a separate chemical that tells you when it's called satiety or satiation, like I'm full. And that's a brain chemical. And it takes 20 minutes to go from I eat the food goes into my bloodstream, raises my glucose, triggers the chemical, and the chemical goes to my brain, and now I know I'm full. It takes 20 minutes, but you can stuff your face in 60 seconds with really all the calories you were needing.
Especially if you're drinking the calories. It's so fast, and not only, you know, do you burp, but then you don't realize that you're full. So note to self, what about never being able to relax? Maybe a person who is on a constant feeling of being overwhelmed or on edge.
I got to do more. Yeah. So there's two things, the positive and the negative. So the positive, dopamine is the anticipation of reward, but our brain habituates to rewards we already have, and it always goes after the next thing. And the reason for this is very simple. Like imagine our hunter-gatherer ancestors, and if they found food, and they were excited for a few minutes, but if you spend the rest of your life next to that food tree, then you're not going to get maybe other nutritional needs met. You're not going to get water or firewood. So you're not meant to just sit on your butt after you have gotten one reward, but you're meant to seek that the unmet need is what stimulates dopamine. However, separate from all of that, we have our threat chemicals, which people call stress. And we have a big brain that's able to create stressors when there's no immediate predator. And when you are having free time, that frees your big brain to worry about and to create a threat. And so that's why often we need to keep our mind busy, because if we don't, we keep creating this endless stream of threats.
Okay, that segues perfectly into my next one, because as you were explaining this, you know what I was picturing is people who go on social media and get angry about anything they can possibly get their hands on. So what chemicals are behind attention grabbing social media posts, or maybe the ones that look for fights online?
Fabulous point. Yeah. So, and I'm so glad you were honest about looking for fights, because so many people today, like, they blame the social media. Like, it made you feel that way without acknowledging that the person had the motivation inside them. So we all have a natural urge to be special. This was known 100 years ago that researchers started studying. You've heard of like the pecking order. Maybe you've watched nature videos. So biologists have seen that animals are very competitive, and the individual who gets the one-up position ends up making more surviving copies of their genes. So natural selection builds a brain that rewards you with a good feeling when you get the one-up position. And we can't get it all the time for two reasons. So one is, like, there's 8 billion other people in the world who want the one-up position just as much as you. And whenever you get it, it's a little release of serotonin, and then your brain metabolizes it in a few minutes. So you want it again and again. The other problem is, in the natural world, if you went around acting like the big monkey all the time, you'd get into fights. So animals only assert themselves when they're sure they can win, so they don't get bitten. And they have a brain that constantly compares themselves to others, which is why we drive ourselves crazy with social comparison. And then they only fight when they see that they're in the one-up position. But on social media, it's an artificially safe world where you can act like a jerk without a real threat.
It's
exactly like when you have a little poodle that barks at big dogs. Like, in nature, that couldn't exist because the poodle would be, you know, beaten up and maybe killed. But when in the pet world, that the poodle is protected, so it has grandiose illusions. So that's the pet world of social media.
I don't think you meant to do this, Dr. Bruning, but you just made the funniest skit for YouTube. I mean, we could have a poodle barking and then put like a little thought bubble around it and use it as a lesson for your book about brain chemicals and how the poodle has grandiose, it's delusions. It's a delusional poodle about how, you know, safe it is and in the world around it, and helping us, you know, relate our current status as modern humans to our evolutionarily developed brains. I think this could be something.
Thank you. Thank you. And I've been segueing into parenting, and you could see how people want to raise their child as this protected little poodle who feels like it runs the world. And then when it goes out into the world of big dogs, it has a shock. And so it's looking for any way that it could bark at the big dogs in a safe way.
You said you're segueing into parenting. You're talking about a new book that's coming up?
Thank you. Well, actually, I've been doing an online video course. It will be out in a couple of weeks. And the third module is called Tough Topics. And I deal with the tough topics that everybody asks me about, which is the same sort of as yours. So love, money, addiction, politics, and parenting.
Ooh, I love that. This is like survival guide for modern living. Okay, one last brain chemical scenario that I want to run by you, and that's playing video games at the expense of sleep. There's a lot of gamers out there. I've heard it's addictive. What brain chemicals are working with that scenario?
Sure. So first, a big issue for people, I think, is fear of not being able to fall asleep. Once you're in bed and you can't fall asleep, it's so frustrating that the next day you say, well, I don't want to go to bed until I'm really tired. And you push yourself. But that pushing yourself is activating, like, the common word for it is a second wind, which is actually dopamine. So a video game, imagine, is what I said about, like, going after the next thing, the next reward, which our ancestors needed, because if they were starving, they needed to push themselves to climb the next mountain to find food on the other side. And so that pushing survival instinct, it has a function, but it also keeps you awake. And then you get into this loop of not being able to fall asleep. The current term for this is sleep hygiene, is to not do arousing things before bedtime. And one thing is, don't listen to the news. I think don't listen to the news ever, because it's designed to upset you. Before bed, do calming things. So for example, like my husband and I would choose a movie, and then sometimes the movie ends up being like not a calming movie. And I just leave the room and do something else. So do something calming before you go to bed. And then the other thing, like I said, when you're in bed and your mind is free, those bad thoughts maybe come into your mind, and or even like the excitement of, oh, tomorrow morning I'm going to do this and this and this, which is all going to wake you up. So listen to something sort of boring as you're going to sleep.
That is such good advice. My husband and I love to watch nature documentaries before bed, especially if they have anything to do with the water. And it's just so calming and it's interesting. And we learn fabulous jellyfish facts that we can dazzle our friends with later. I love the idea of listening to something calming too. I've heard people listen to foreign language books on tape, because then their brain doesn't try to engage with the language, but they hear the voice. Have you ever heard of that?
That's a great idea. Yeah. Very good.
Very interesting.
I do that with videos, like if I watch a soap opera in another language. And I speak some languages. So when I see the subtitles, then I understand better. And it keeps me so busy that I can't think about anything else. And that's exactly what I need.
Oh, I like that idea. Well, I want to definitely talk about more tips. That tip, that sleep tip, though, that's worth its weight in gold alone. But before we get into any sort of tips, I want to talk about something that I never heard before until I read it in your book. And that's the difference between philosophical and physical happiness. So I'd love for you to talk on that.
So philosophical is the verbal brain, and our verbal brain is always telling us, like we call it splaining, right? It's always explaining, oh, the reason I'm happy is this, the reason I'm sad is that. But it really doesn't know. It's just guessing, because our chemicals are controlled by the lower brain, which is called the limbic system, that we've inherited from earlier animals. So all mammals have the same brain structures of the amygdala, the hippocampus, you've heard of them, that controls your chemicals, and they can't process language since animals don't speak. So they never tell you why they're making you feel good or bad. So your verbal brain is literally guessing. And then it comes up with explanations that make you look good, which the simple example is when someone says, oh, I'm not jealous, or, you know, I'm not defensive. I didn't care about that.
You always know you're lying to yourself if your voice gets higher and higher the more you try to explain it.
Yeah. So remind me now, I forgot the question.
That's okay. Just explaining the difference between the physical and the philosophical brain.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think a lot of us go, just like I said in the intro, I should be happy. I have a roof over my head. I have people I love. They love me. Everything is good. Okay. Why do I not feel happy?
Great. Okay. So the first thing, you don't feel happy because our brain did not evolve to make you happy. It evolved to promote survival. So as soon as all of your needs are met, it evolved to focus on the next big thing or the next survival need. So imagine that birth control did not exist until quite recently. So all through human history, for millions of years, people just had like another baby and another baby, and they were always running, and like, you know, the baby cries and it's hungry, and it was hard to find food, it's hard to find water, hard to protect your baby from predators. So they never had a free minute. They always had to be thinking of the next thing. So this whole illusion that we should just be sitting around happy, this is a modern thing, but that's not the job our brain evolved to do. But then our verbal brain is always exposed to all of this yakking about how we should think. And the modern brand of yakking is that ego is bad and you shouldn't care about yourself. You should only care about others. But then because your brain is producing unhappiness and you can't admit that you care about yourself, so you say, oh, I'm unhappy for the sake of others. So
That's good. That is really insightful. And that would also explain why you tell yourself you're happy and then you participate in what ends up being unhelpful or unhealthy behaviors, like purchasing things you don't need at the expense of your, you know, retirement, etc. Hey, Curiositors, just a quick pause to show gratitude to our sponsors and give you some special deals. If you ever wonder where I find guests for the show, the answer is it varies a lot. And since it's something that gets asked a lot, I started including the backstory of each episode in my Monday emails. And then on Saturday, I share cliff notes and clickable links in case what you heard was so good you wish you could have taken notes. If you want to be included, text REAL to 66866 if you're in the US, or go to MeredithForReal.com if you're elsewhere. If you've got backyard barbecue plans for 2022, but mosquitoes are not invited, I recommend InSec. I've been using their pest control service for several years now. They have a certified mosquito identification specialist on staff, and pollinator care is always top of mind. If you live in the Florida Panhandle or the Gulf Coast of Alabama, give them a call, ensec.net. If you watch the show on YouTube, then you see the beautiful backdrop of Trader John's, the exhibit where I record the show inside the Pensacola Museum of History. This is just one museum under the umbrella of the UWF Historic Trust. If you're planning a trip to Pensacola and need an indoor activity option, pick up a ticket. It's good for a whole week. Get your tickets in person so you can show the agent one of my emails and get $2 off an adult ticket. Now back to the show. Remember to stay till the end where I give you a sneak peek of next week's episode.
Yes, exactly. And frankly, the short run reward versus long run reward is is a very complex skill, because the short run happy chemicals are very real, whereas the anticipation of how happy you will be when you're retired, you know, how do you get happy chemicals from that? It's, again, it's an illusion that your higher brain has to create and to say, oh, think how happy when I'll quit my job 20 years from now. And I'll quit 5 minutes sooner if I don't buy this thing. But who knows, maybe if I buy this thing, I'll look good and I'll get a promotion and then I'll be able to retire even faster. So that's how clever your verbal brain is.
Oh, that's tricky. So if the verbal brain can be reduced to yakking and the primitive brain is oftentimes in the driver's seat, wouldn't it stand to reason that talk therapy for treatment of depression would be ineffective?
Yes, but if that implies that, excuse me, that pills are effective, that's not the appropriate conclusion, because these chemicals are not designed to be on all the time. So the one I said about serotonin, let's explain that, because that's the one we associate most with pills, although also now dopamine. And by the way, dopamine is also cocaine. So, in the monkey world, so if a little monkey grabs for a banana near a bigger monkey, the bigger monkey will bite it. So this is the nature video. Maybe you want to watch it before bed or maybe not.
Right.
So if a bigger monkey's going to bite me, then I can't grab for that banana because I'd get injured. But I still need a banana to survive. So I look for an opportunity for a banana where I can be the bigger monkey. So that's what everyone's always looking for. But nobody gets that all the time. Even big monkeys don't get it all the time. If they did, they would quickly be in a fight with another big monkey, and then they would be eliminated from the gene pool. So nobody is getting this serotonin all the time. So if you took a pill to get it all the time, you would be interrupting your natural process. And then your verbal brain would still be flooding you with this unhelpful message of like, oh, my life is so bad. Everybody else is a big monkey and I'm not. And it's so unfair and I'm left out. So it's really the white matter that I mentioned in the beginning, which is the old neural pathway that's saying, I'm a little monkey. It's so unfair. Everybody else is happy easily and I'm not. So that's really what we need to change. And that's what my books are about.
So it's retraining your brain is what you're suggesting as a sustainable path to, I would use the word maybe contentment.
Yes. And it's retraining the thought loops that can influence your chemicals, because the it would be great if you could just influence your mammal brain directly, but it's hard to do because what makes it happy is so many unhealthy things. But if you're feeding it unhappy thoughts and then you learn to feed it happy thoughts, that's your power.
I see. So that sounds a lot like executive function skills. Is that, am I correct? Is that related?
Yes and no. I'm not 100% sure how people are using these executive function skills, because I mean, using the term, because I agree with you if you're doing it the way I said it, but some people use that to think, I got to raise my productivity. Oh. I got to be on all the time. I got to ignore my inner mammal, and my inner mammal is the bad guy. I have to keep it in a box and just use my higher brain. And that's not what I'm saying.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I'm definitely thinking from a personal perspective, as one does, of, you know, acknowledging, okay, I'm feeling this way. Is there an actual threat? Assessing, you know, the situation in terms of reality, and then going, how, this is just a me thing, but I ask myself, like, how can I trick my brain into, for example, getting started on this project that I'm putting off because I feel insecure that maybe I won't do it well. So, you're excited. I must be onto something good.
Yes. Okay. That's perfect. Okay. So any big project. So the simple answer is what I've been studying lately is animal training. So how do they teach an animal to do a new trick? So let's say an animal is doing a triple flip. Like, you can't tell the animal, oh, if you do a triple flip, I'll give you a big reward, because they don't know what the triple flip is. So you have to break it down into tiny steps and give them a reward for each step. So that's how you get started on the project, is to break it down into tiny steps and give yourself a reward for each step. So, for example, if I'm working on a project, like, and then obviously everyone thinks, yeah, but if I, let's say if I write a book, but how will I sell it? And how embarrassed will I be if no one buys it? So you can't really sell it until you've written it. So if you're already going into the failure mode of what could go wrong, you can't, your mind isn't free to do it. So to say, okay, I'm only going to focus on the step of writing the outline and let all the rest of it take care of itself later on. I'm going to give myself a week to write the outline. And every day of that week, I'm going to reward myself with 15 minutes of free time to do this other thing that I love that I never get to do.
I love it. We're basically training our animal brain with modern day bananas.
With good stuff.
Yeah. I love that. That's really empowering, actually. Okay. So talk to me about the vicious loop of happiness, the vicious side. What is dopamine disappointment?
So every one of these chemicals has a downside because, again, they're not designed to be on all the time. They're designed to motivate action in that very specific moment when it actually promotes survival to have them on, which is not all the time. So dopamine disappointment is your brain habituates to rewards you already have. And my favorite example is when I walk into a chocolate shop, it's like, oh my God, I love it. It's the smell, you're in heaven. And so I think, well, what if I got a job in a chocolate shop? Would I be in heaven all the time?
Right.
Well, if that were true, then everybody would be clamoring to work in a chocolate shop or a coffee roasting plant. And yet we don't, because the brain habituates to rewards you already have. And I actually did this. I went into a chocolate shop and interviewed the person who worked there and got a video of it. And she said after every morning when she walks in, she loves it. But then within an hour, she doesn't notice the smell anymore. So the the way this applies to daily life, everybody knows this feeling that you have a crush on so-and-so and you think, oh, I'll be happy forever if they smile at me. And then you get the first date and you think, I'll be happy forever if they have a second date with me. And long story short, if you end up having a relationship with them, you're not happy forever, because when you finally get them, it stops triggering dopamine, and then you blame them that the excitement is gone. So people really need to know that excitement is about getting the new reward. Once you have it, you take it for granted, like hot running water that would have thrilled our ancestors, but doesn't make us happy. And don't blame your partner for not being a new thing, and find new hobbies and new activities to stimulate your dopamine instead of blaming them.
Yeah. I remember reading that you said in your book, I think is where you said it, that the brain only responds to new information, just like the example you gave about the chocolate. And so I was thinking about new and novel things and exploring curiosity, which is kind of, you know, what this show is about. But I never thought about the benefit outside of a societal improvement aspect, because I just think that, you know, I've told you, I think the world's a better place when it's a curious one, and that's why we're here. But what a cool benefit you've just unlocked that leading with curiosity and exploring new activities can not only make you feel those chemicals that may be lacking in your very routine life, but they could bond you closer to your partner when you do them together and experience the newness together. That's pretty exciting.
Yes, but in fact, it's great if you have this fabulous, but I was never able to get that. And then I had to realize that what it sparks my curiosity is not going to be the same as what sparks my husband's curiosity. And it's, if you expect that, you know, we're so individual that we can't share everything. You know, these couples who work together, or, right, you know, you can't always get excited about the same things. So whatever overlaps you have, great, but you can't be mad at them if they don't get excited about the same new things that you do.
That's a good balancing statement. That's true. Our thing is travel. So, and I heard that you're a big travel fan as well. And so when we go to a new place together, it's really great for us, because the smells and the sounds and the photographs that we take while we're there and the videos that we take while we're there, you know, we can experience bits of it, you know, over and over again. And then the planning of the next trip together. And that I feel like is part of what makes us work. But that's very true. I'm really excited about plants. And although my sweet husband, he does listen very well, God bless him, but he's not as excited about the plants. So if I want to talk about plants and experience that mirror excitement, like with someone else, I got to find a plant person. So that's a very, very
exactly
good point.
Yeah, exactly. I love to travel and my sweet husband goes with me, but it really is not his thing. I mean, he likes it, but maybe totally different aspects of the trip is what he likes. So we really have to accept that every brain is built by its own past experience. And if you could find someone you can live with, there's so many variables that if you have the basic daily life things in common, you just can't hold it against them that they don't get excited about all the same things. And I have a fascinating example. When we go on long trips, I love to listen to a driving trip. I love to listen to an audiobook. So we have to find an audiobook that excites all of us, that both of us. And so we found this one overlap. So he's a scientist, but if I listen to a science book, you know, it depends. I mean, some of them, the guy makes it exciting, like the historical story of how this was invented. I love that. Or the biography of the scientist. I love that. It has to be a story. So that's the one little thing we have in common. And we listen to that and we both love it. And we both look forward to it. But then maybe he has 100 books on his list that I wouldn't like, and I have 100 books on my list that he wouldn't like. So is finding the overlap is the challenge.
It is. It's the challenge and the reward. So I guess in a yes. way you're igniting those seeking brain chemicals. Let's find it. As long as you view it that way, as long as you view it as an exciting scavenger hunt, I could see where some couples may not embrace that. But as we come to a close, I would love to just create some space for you to share any more strategies that you feel are helpful. You've given a lot already. We talked about different sleep techniques. I'm going over my little list of the things that you addressed. If you have any or tips for overeating, you know, wait 20 minutes. Are there any other overreaching strategies for happiness aside from expectation management, which you've also so expertly covered, that people would find as a useful tool?
Sure. I always like to talk about social comparison. So first I mentioned how this is a natural thing we do. We do it all the time. And because we think we should not do it, we see it when other people do it, but we don't see how we're doing it. So we think they're judging me and I just need to do all these all these frustrations because it's their fault for judging me. So we're much better off admitting that our inner mammal is always comparing, because in the state of nature, you have to know, like, are they big enough to kill me or not? That's what our brain evolved to do. So how can you get this good feeling of being in the one-up position, which triggers your serotonin, without being a jerk? So, nobody would think of serotonin as the one-up position because that's not nice. And everybody's been told that it's calming. And it's, so the reality is, let's call it calm self-confidence. Ooh. That it's safe to assert yourself. And how can you feel that it's safe to assert yourself? Well, it's not always safe to assert yourself. So it's not meant to be on all the time. And yet we want it all the time. So a simple way is what I just say is to put yourself up without putting others down. And you could set a timer for 30 seconds, 3 times a day, where you remind yourself to put yourself up without putting others down. But then don't expect to be in the one-up position every minute of every day.
Those are excellent. I really like those. This has been such an enlightening conversation. I think that it will really give people some new thoughts around happiness and their how they think about themselves, really, how you view yourself. And self-compassion is kind of a underlying theme I see in here. Like, hey, you still got this primal brain you're working with. It's okay. Let's work with it instead of against it. That's beautiful. Can you tell people one more time the date of when your online course is coming out and where they can find your books?
Oh, well, you may have heard a little beep right now. And I just thought, oh, maybe that was from the person who was going to tell me the date. So I'm having a soft launch in November and, with lots of advanced discounts. And then the grand opening of the full course is going to be in mid-January 2023 it's going to have 3 modules. The first one is very short, simple, and entertaining. So, young people and people in recovery would find it fun. And you could even ask your family and coworkers to watch it because it's actually entertaining. And then the other modules go deeper into understanding your old circuits and then applying it to the tough topics.
Ooh, I like that. And what's the website where they can find all this?
InnerMammalInstitute.org, InnerMammalInstitute.org. And I have now a free 5-day happy chemical jumpstart where you get 1 email a day for 5 days explaining each of the chemicals.
Oh, I love it. All the fun stuff. Thank you so much. This was amazing.
Thank you. Great questions. I feel like you really get it.
Well, thank you. Thank goodness. See, there, that was my good chemical hit for the day, that compliment. I receive it.
Yeah, no, you really did.
Thanks for listening. If you've loved a couple episodes of the show, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or the Good Pods app. If you liked this episode, you'll also like the one where I share my personal natural mental health hacks. It's episode 63. Stay tuned next week when I talk with an expert about the science of mating and dating as we explore the topic of the friend zone.